We're live, Jimmy D and the Wolf podcast. Oh. And today we have special guest, Papa Fedge, who's going to tell us about his archive project. This should be episode 71 if my count is right. So we've been doing this 70 episodes up to now, and now we are to the level where we can have Papa Fedge on as a, not just a commentary guest, but as a featured guest. So you and I have known each other a long time, and we talk a lot about different things. And
we do, yes.
We grew up to the same church in South Dakota. And one of your recent projects, which is intriguing to me, it's called the Papa Fedge Archive Project. Is that the correct title?
Yes.
And you're coming through fine, by the way.
Okay.
Before we went live, we had some cutouts, but now I think you're doing fine.
I'll try to talk gently.
That might help, or I don't know if that's pertinent. Yeah. But could you give us a synopsis of this project? It's very intriguing to me.
Yeah, I am in the process of just starting out archiving my life, and I've been working with, will be working with a guy named Steve Hayes. We call him Steve-O Hayes, and we went to college together at North Central, back then Bible College. It's called North Central University now, right in downtown Minneapolis, colleges. And he's got a podcast studio called Happy Life Studios, and I think he's on 6.5 years, 300 some episodes of a podcast that he does called Happy Life. And then he has a couple of other podcasts that he does with people through that studio that are just getting going. And then this is going to be the fourth one. He's going to take the episodes from the YouTube channel and turn them into a podcast channel and put those on Happy Life Studios. And he basically is interviewing me is what the format kind of is. And I have this picture here I can show. This is kind of what has kind of pushed me. I hadn't been in the crawl space of my house. In fact, it's right below where I'm sitting now. We have a crawl space, this addition that I live in back here as crawl space, no basement, but quite a bit of storage under there. And it's got, I don't know, some fan or something that blows around in there, so it doesn't soak up humidity or whatever. So it's kind of a cool feature of where I live. And anyway, I came across this picture. This is of my great-great-grandfather, Alpheus King Boyd, and his 8 children. I think my great-great-grandmother was deceased by the time this photo got taken, around the turn of the century, a year or two, either way, the best we can figure. And then the youngest of those 8 kids is my great-grandfather, James. Yeah, who was the dad of my grandpa Elmer, and then my dad Jerry, and then myself. And so that, and I'd sang in a couple of funerals in the last half a year or so, and I'd been to a couple other ones, and it kind of started to be just a notion in my brain that these people haven't left a lot behind. Like, we'd get to chatting and it would just come up a couple of times. Like, there wasn't a lot of footage, what I call footage, video archives of some cool people. And a couple of the people I didn't know, the ones I sang at, I didn't know them personally, but I listened and interacted with people enough to get a flavor of their lives and who they were. And then, of course, looking at this picture, it's hard to come up with a cool descriptive word, but just imagine being able to go and turn on your phone and click somewhere and have these guys in this picture. One gal would be my great, how's that work? Great, great aunt. Is there an extra great when you're talking about aunts and uncles? Like,
I think so, but
yeah, I think great comes in one time quicker. Like level with the grandpas is a great uncle, so that would be my great great aunt in there, and then six other great great uncles. I mean, and then of course my great grandfather and great great grandfather. What it would be? I just got stare at that picture sometimes. Like, what if I could go and just listen to someone interview those guys about? I mean, my great grandfather was born in 1843 and died in 1911.
Wow. That was before the Civil War. So he was an adult during the Civil War. Civil War was 61, early 1860s.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Maybe. I never thought about that, but
he was 18 when it broke out. Pretty sure 61. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's kind of amazing to think about. So anyway, I have the time to do it, and Steve-O is a cool guy he's kind of got all the technical and he does that kind of stuff. Anyway, he sits down with people and podcasts and interacts and whatnot. So I just finally decided to go ahead and actually do it instead of think about doing it. So we spent a little time together in the last few weeks, and I think we have 11 or 12 episodes done as I sit here today. And I think three are out on the YouTube channel, Papa Fedge Archive Project. And so it's off and running. I think we're going to settle into 15 to 16, 17, 18 minutes. Try to get to that point with each episode. And each episode will just be a story. Once we get through some of the more framework type information, then we'll just get into stuff that's happened that I, for some reason, I'm compelled to have outside of me instead of inside of me. And I don't think there's going to be any shortage of things to talk about. I'm just some reason I've done a lot of different things and bumped into a lot of different people. And like, I think I told you a week or two ago, Tim, somehow I have 3 hole-in-ones. Or that could be, I don't know, by my skill level in golf. Like Bryson DeChambeau, if people know him, he's a professional golfer right now. Famous, infamous almost right now for the things he's working on in his golf. And he has won in his whole life.
Oh, wow. Wow.
One hole in one so far. So, I've been, this is another just little anecdotal thing. I've been kidnapped twice in my life.
Well, I didn't know that.
Like who's kidnapped? Whoever gets kidnapped to start with, let alone twice, you know, in their life. So
how old were you when these happened?
One, I was 12, I believe, 11 or 12. I have a hard time knowing. It's either the summer of 75 or 76. I think it was the summer of 76. So I would have been 12. And when I was growing up telling my kids about that, I called that getting kidnapped. But that's a 3 or 4 or 5 3 probably 3.5-4 hour ordeal. And then once in the Philippines when I was coming home.
I have a VA in the Philippines, and yeah. I want to go visit them.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. It was kind of my fault how it went down, because I was pretty I guess everybody else I was with would drink a lot when we go out on the town, Long Post City, when we were in the, I would go to the Philippines. That was my mobilization site when I was in the Navy Reserve. So we'd 3 out of 4 years that I was in, we went to the Philippines over to Subic Bay for 2.5 weeks. And so we had this off of the base, there was literally hundreds of bars. Like, we were never there when the fleet was in, but when the fleet was in, it was quite the last time I was there, there's like a British aircraft carrier that was import there, and had that British aircraft carrier actually has that loop on it, that ramp that shoots up into the air. It's a really cool looking ship. But aside from that one ship, when that was in, which made the town a lot busier, I was never there. when it was very busy. So there was hundreds of bars, you know, nightclubs and stuff outside in Longapo City back then. That was 86, 88, and 89 that I was there. Just top, you know, basement, main level, top. Anyway, some of the people that I was working with, this place called Fat Freddy's, the people would get, my friends specifically, would get drinking too much. So they just let you sleep there in the bar. They just had pillows and blankets and little.
What?
Yeah.
What?
So you didn't have to stumble back to the base. And since there were so many places to choose from, you know, everybody tried to have some, what you call, competitive advantage over everybody. So that was one of these Fat Freddy's that they could just sleep. So I'd done that, but I didn't drink. I just stayed there to watch my friends sleep and see, make sure that everything went okay. So I woke up first and was just tired. It was like 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and I'm just stumbling back. You know, it was probably 8 blocks back to the gate or something. And I got like a block and a half from the gate, and this guy pulls up in a jeepney. I got a motorcycle. This one was a motorcycle, I guess, may not be officially called a jeepney, but diesel fuel, all painted up bright, like all the vehicles were. And he just says, "Hey, I found this ID of one of your shipmates and one of your Navy guys." And I was just like, oh, I'm so tired. And they must have had the routine down really well. I go, oh, yeah, okay. He goes, "Hop in. Let's buzz it up to the gate, you know." So I hopped in, but we didn't buzz up to the gate. we buzzed a couple of miles into the, you know, I don't know what you call it, abyss. Like the
well, did you like want to jump out, or I mean, did you?
I was thinking about it. Yeah, I was thinking about it, but he got going fast and just kept, you know, there was a terrible amount of traffic that time in the morning. So I thought,
did you ask him what he was doing?
I had a pretty good idea by then. So we get to where we're going, and he escorts me back into, you know, back between a couple of houses and into the back of a house. And there's like half a dozen guys waiting there. And I was there about an hour and a half. Finally, they just decided to just take all my money, which.
What did they do while you were there?
Oh, just ask me how long I'm here for, my rank, and. Just, you know, probably, I don't know if they, like, if I answered the questions differently, if they'd have taken my ID, or, you know, maybe I'd still be there, you know, as a maid in the house for the rest of my life. I don't know. But they ended up just on that trip, I put my wallet, my money and ID and everything in my hat that I was wearing, but it didn't take them long to. They knew I had to have some on me, so ended up finding it in there. And anyway, it was a long, probably a couple hours, close to a couple hours by the time I got back to where I started from.
Was it, did you have fear? You had to have some level of fear.
No, I had a pretty good, no, I wasn't short on that, you know, but I was mostly like, how did I get here? You know, like, how tired am I? It was just like.
How much money did they take from you?
I got to think I had, my mind is like somewhere is around 80 or 120. Sometimes, not just then, but my whole life, I'll remember a number, but I can't remember if it's $10 on this side of 100 or $10 on the other side, or an address or something is like, you know, 97 or 1903, like 18. I think it was right around in there. I'd say 80 to 120, and I was excited to give it to him. I was like, you know, I wrote him out a check if I had my checkbook with me, which I probably
had. And then they took you back?
Yeah, he towed me right back, and I didn't, those whatever blocks, you know, he did take me up to the gate then. I was like, I thought, all in all, it wasn't too bad of a deal, you know, like, it's pretty.
Well, I've heard of.
It could have been a lot worse.
I've heard of Americans being held for ransom. I mean, you know, huge amounts of money.
Yeah, my guess is they did this kind of thing fairly often. You know, try at that time of the morning, probably people just like me stumbling back. And the pitch that they made was just to your better senses of, oh man, someone's ID, you know, I better help out with that. That's basically, you know, so I guess I wasn't such a care. Maybe I was too caring to care about whoever might have lost their ID, but well, it was a pretty good. They had the kinks worked out of their system for sure. I know that I was not the only guy, and I didn't tell one person. I didn't tell anybody, any of my friends.
Gosh. Wow.
I was too kind of embarrassed, and somewhere I have a picture of there's a falls near Subic Bay in the Philippines within an hour or two, and it's a long word, and then the word falls. And it's huge, huge mountains, hills on the side of this river. And I have a picture somewhere of being in a, you know, a dugout canoe with another person, a lady that we traveled with that was in my reserve unit. And I and that person that paddled that, somewhere I have that. And that's the day that happened, that story happened. Later in the day, we went as a group to that falls and took those canoes or whatever. So when I get ready to do an episode specifically on this story, I'll have to dig and find that picture. But that's a good example of what I have in mind for episodes of just it's specifically designed in my mind for generations to come. You know, somebody that's looking at a picture and wondering who this character is when I'm the great great grandfather or beyond. I was saying on in the episodes that my grandson have a picture of him pointing at Galpheus King Boyd. So that's four greats. That's, you know, as he grows up, I'll be explaining to him that guy is your great, 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 great grandfather, you know? So anyway, that's what the project is about. And interestingly, I kind of went, why I'm doing it public is kind of just to keep my own self feet to the fire. Like, there'll be a handful of people that go, hey, Veg, it's been 3 weeks since we saw an episode like that. A few people, you know. And then one thing that might be interesting is like people I met in one sector or juncture, whatever, crossroads of my life, they could know about other, like people from the Navy that knew me in the Navy will be able to learn about things that happened to me when I was a kid or in high school or now later on in life before or after they met me. So that almost like cross merchandising of my life of lots of people like that. When I went to Florida for 6 months, I have probably about eight people that I'm Facebook friends with, families or people that I either met on a beach or on a plane, that kind of stuff. So those people would not really have any ability to know much more about me. Cause I only spent a few days or one plane ride with them, but this way they'll be able to, maybe if they're interested enough, to fill in, have some more, you know, data or whatever.
Well, could you give us a half page to three quarter page synopsis of your life so far? You know, the pertinent.
Yeah.
They probably, you know.
Yeah. Well, I can go pretty quick. I think in one episode, it took me a little while, but I'm getting better at it when people ask me about.
Just the highlights, things that they put in a, you know.
Yeah. Well, as far as life goes, you know, I'm the youngest of five kids. And then we talked a little bit about my time in Indiana before we moved to South Dakota. We moved, like, I think I lived six places.
You were born where? You were born
Indiana, where? Warsaw, Indiana. And then, we lived in quite a few different towns. It's kind of weird. I can't tell if my head's crooked or my one ear is lower than the other. So my glasses are probably just like doing whatever they're going, like, hey, don't blame me, you know. But anyway, they
chicken farmer. Your dad was a chicken farmer.
Yeah, well, he worked at DeKalb and stuff like that. And so all of my kind of Indiana memories are pretty good. I liked all the little towns, and I can remember back to when I was three. So I'll definitely have a few stories about when I was real, real young. But then we moved to South Dakota in 72, and I stayed there. We stayed there till we graduated. I graduated in 83, and then went on to Minneapolis for a year. Tried college there, and I moved. My parents, my mom and stepmom moved to. Well, I need to say my parents got divorced when I was 10, so that's how I got my name Fedge. that's a fairly significant event. I got my stepbrother and my stepsister moved in into the family, came along, and so that was summer of 75. I converted over to the name of Fedge, and that's served me just fine. It's pretty cool. If you have to
get it's because that, there was another the stepbrother's named Jeff, and he was yeah. older, so you had to take another name.
Well, yeah, that's what they told me. So it's kind of funny. He goes by JJ now, so we don't even have the Jeff just gets it's dormant, you know. So they could have probably done that, but so that's how I kind of picked up that name. My mom and stepdad moved from Huron, South Dakota, back to Sioux Falls my first year of college. So summer of 84, I moved to Sioux Falls. And from 84 to 89, I joined the Navy Reserve. I was in the reserves during that time. I went to boot camp in 85, and I started and stopped college 3 times. Went to National College of Business, and then SDSU. I started and stopped and started and stopped. And May, I decided to go active duty in the military, in the Navy. And then,
You were an older compared to most of your compatriots that were starting.
Yeah, in fact, most of those officers that were coming out of college, those ensigns, lieutenants, lieutenant junior grades, and lieutenants, I was about their same age. It was really, I was pretty good friends with a lot of them, as close of friends as you could be, you know. So, so I was a little bit later, but one good thing is I got to move up in ranks a little bit in the reserve. So I was, I was a petty officer by the time I got to the boat, to the Von Steuben, it's called.
And what kind of boat was that?
It's a ballistic submarine. James Madison class, I think they called it. And 400 foot long, 16 missiles. About the first 2/3 of my first patrol, I slept right between 2 nuclear missiles in lower level missile compartment with my good friend. He's still a Facebook friend. In fact, he just chatted with me. We just chatted a little bit this week. Lance Ratliff, he's right below me. And he found a way to spend, I think, 6 or 8, but all of his patrols he spent down there. Somehow he pulled that off because he just liked it down there. And you had to travel a ways for go to the head, take a shower, go to the bathroom. But it was pretty cool down there. And then something happened. I moved up to regular berthing somewhere. Somebody else got kind of in trouble. They kicked him down there and brought me up, I guess. But it's kind of an interesting thing. At your head and your feet are a couple of missiles that about, I'm told 5 or 6 of those missiles at the time could pretty much, if the wind was blowing the right way, pretty much wipe out the world. And you're sleeping right between 2 of them.
Wow. Wow.
How many
months or 6-month deployments, right? How many deployments?
Well, there's 2 crews on there, a blue and a gold crew. And I think our patrols were right around 110 days, 111 days.
Okay. Not 6 months, a little less than 6 months. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The patrols.
Three and a half, I guess.
Yeah. But that's we'd spend about 3 or 4 days on the surface and then dive. So we'd be down. We'd literally be 3.5 months without being on the surface. We'd actually
3.5 months without seeing sun or ocean.
Yeah. And I guess I'm able to tell you it was 400 feet. That's where we normally traveled.
I would have thought lower than that, but 400 feet, huh?
Well, that's just what I'm able to say.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're keeping it secret. After all these years, so
have to keep close the rest.
Huh? What did Jimmy say?
I didn't catch it.
If you told Jimmy, you have to kill us, right?
right. Someone would probably be after me, but
so you got out. How old were you when you got out?
Yeah, well, that's another thing. I actually got diagnosed with bipolar while I was in there. I did that about 2 years. And that's another significant, like if I'm going to archive my life, I can't really leave that out, And so that's that's a part of me, or a factor in a lot of things. Probably 4 attempts at college had a lot to do with that not being diagnosed or dealt with. I didn't know about it. And so I would have these semesters where school was just easy and I'd get great grades and my life would just feel like a breeze. And then I'd get into these times where I always blamed it on my heat. And when I was in Brookings going to college, I always blamed it on the heated waterbed. Couldn't get out of bed. Couldn't get out of that thing in the wintertime to go to class, you know? So until I kind of found out more about how my mind really works and that feature of my existence, I just kind of blamed it on external things, you know? And so that found me, out of the Navy quite a bit earlier than I'd planned. And so that first year in Charleston, I decided to make an album and go travel around singing churches, just songs that I'd written prior to that, starting in high school. And I rounded up 10 songs, enough for an album. And I just...
You do have a beautiful voice, Jeff.
Oh, thanks.
I remember you singing in church in the 90s when we were in church together.
Yeah, I liked singing. I've always liked singing. I think the earliest song I can remember knowing is like American Pie. This is in Indiana now, before we even moved to South Dakota. And Born Free, I think, went to a movie. And that it might have been the movie Born Free. I don't know. It had a lot of animals in it. And it was just at, it wasn't a movie theater. It was at like an auditorium or a gym or something. You know, those are a couple of my earliest songs that I can remember knowing.
Okay, so after the Navy, and
yeah, I did that. I ended up back in Huron in 92. Interestingly enough, January of 92, I moved back, and our family moved to Huron, South Dakota in January of 72. So it's 20 years to the time, exact week, that our family moved there, that I moved back there after all those, you know, all the stuff I just got done describing to you. And mostly just my grandpa lived there. My brother and grandpa lived in the house that we grew up in, across from the courthouse there. You would know that, Tim, on Nebraska, 366 Nebraska, or anybody that's watching this that might be from there. So that was kind of cool. So I just was up there and actually stayed a few months, about 3 months, before I found an apartment in my old brother, in my brother Jim's old room. So anyway, that kind of just, you know, I found out, here's an interesting thing about just stepping a little bit back, that making that album and traveling around is one of the most interesting times, because it's one of the things, maybe one of the only things I've done, one of the few things I can say that I had a plan and I put it in motion and it came out exactly like I planned, but I didn't like it. Right. I was singing in church on a Sunday, and then I'd have a Wednesday and a Sunday and a Wednesday and a Sunday. And I just basically traveled from South Carolina to South Dakota 2 or 3 times, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, like that. And, but that downtime in between, right? Like, it seemed fun. It seemed like it would be just great fun. But I had this 3-cylinder Subaru Justy car, and I, you know, it didn't take much to, you know, it didn't take much money to, for what I had going. I paid some rent where I lived in South Carolina, and I had to pay gas and I'd eat. That was it. So that wasn't really a problem, but it wore on me quick. And that's kind of why I decided to go back to Huron, to at least some familiarity of some sort, you know. So,
well, I think, you know, both of us having grown up in the church, and my sister and brother-in-law were missionaries to Mongolia, and you know Pam well.
Same graduate class. We graduated the same year high school.
And well, so we same high school. School together, went to church together.
Church together, yeah.
Anyway, they had to itinerate to raise their funds to go to Mongolia. And that was a 2-year ordeal. That was so hard on them, because, and that was back when you could get churches on Sunday. You could literally do a Sunday morning, Sunday night, and a Wednesday. So you could get three a week.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty common back then.
Now churches don't have a Sunday night, and Wednesday nights are rarely where you have a guest. You can have a guest.
Yeah, you'd have that many people in the same room on a Wednesday. It's kind of more rare now. They might have stuff, but it's here.
Might have small groups or something like that. So now the air is radically different. But even then, it wore on them tremendously.
Yeah.
Damaged her back. I know she had some back issues.
The travel,
the traveling, sitting in the car and all that. And very difficult. But now, so there's another way. I mean, there's in my church, in the worship band, there are a couple of, one of the guys, but he hasn't played that often because he's gone a lot. But the drummer, there's a couple of people that played in our band. I don't know whether they're part of the band or they come in sometimes. And they are in this group called We Are They. I hope I said it right. It's a Christian band. Now they go out and I look at their Instagram, and they're a Christian group, and they play like 5 gigs a week. I mean, they're busy, very busy. I counted up, I think it was like 20 in the month of July, but that's a whole different animal because that's a standalone event. You can have that on Monday night, a Tuesday night, a Wednesday night, a Thursday night, a Friday night, a Saturday night, a Sunday night. It'd be a standalone event at the local venue. The local auditorium in the local town. Doesn't have to even be in a church. So that's a little higher level thing. You can literally you reach that level, you can work a lot and monetarily actually quite lucrative. But to be at the level where you're dependent on where you were at, it's slim. It'd be even harder today. Very hard.
Yeah. Well, mine was more, I didn't even really mind the driving. It was, I got kind of bonded to the people I just got done being with. And then you got to say goodbye to them. You know, like you only have the hours that you have. You might stay in someone's house or have a meal and stuff. But the way I'm wired, like it's like every time I went somewhere, I had to say goodbye and I didn't really feel like it. And then you're alone until the next one. And then you do that again. I don't know how to describe it really. It's just like Velcro only with people. You attach and then rip. Onto the next place, attach, rip onto the next place. It just, I would never have been able to know that. I'm glad I kind of did it because I might always wanted to do it. And I would have always thought it was really something cool.
How many months did you do that?
I'd say 10 about.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. The from when the album came out in 91 until I moved to Huron. So yeah, maybe 9, something like that. I can't remember exact month that came out in 91, but.
Did you have studio musicians play on it? How did you?
You have a copy of that on a drive or something of that album. It was just one guy. He did all the instruments. He played a few of them live, two or three.
Where in the city? In Minneapolis?
Charleston, South Carolina. So for the time, it was probably pretty. It wasn't cheap for the times, but it sounds. It's different now, you know, you can kind of tell it was all a lot of synthesizers and, drums and stuff. You can tell whatever you call that, computerized or whatever. But we had one lady, Margie Elsie, I think her name was. She used to do backup for like Roy Clark and stuff. And he hired her and she's got some parts on there that made the songs sound a lot better. Truthfully, I'm glad we brought her in because it really added, I think two or three of them, she did a lot of harmonies, I think you guys call them, whatever. But so it was fine. I never had that problem that anybody said that, you know.
Well, how'd you get the gigs? How'd you get the bookings? Because
I knew a lot of pastors from my travels, you know, so then they know a lot of people. And then my brother Dave is, you know, he's Assembly of God guy down in Springfield. So what happened was specifically one song is kind of an afterthought I put on there was that closed, I think, the whole album was This Little Light of Mine. And my nephew came and sang with me, and he was like 10 at the time. And he and I kind of looked the same. He wears a big beard like this. He's like 41 or 2 now. But people, like, when we used to play golf in 92, 93 in the summers down there, they used to say he's 12 going on 18, and Fedge is like 26 going on 18. because we had about the same mentality, him and I, back then. So he came and sang on that, and I didn't mean for it to end up this way, but it ended up being very absorbed into the children's ministries of churches I would go to. Like, I did a couple, and then people forwarded on, hey, you need to make sure that your kids hear this. So a lot of times I would sing a couple songs in the big church and then go do a whole concert for the kids. And it's just some of the songs seem to resonate with kids. I never really had that in mind when I did it. But so, you know, it wasn't for that terribly long amount of time. And I kind of just used all the contacts that I'd known from when I was a kid all the way to my college time and any contacts that I had, and just filled in the gaps. But
well,
anyway, I was just saying we got that got me to Huron, and then in 94 I got elected to the city commission in Huron. Probably one of the most significant, if I had to pick one significant event in my life, it would be that one, because I was just working an entry-level job in the human services field, working with in the disabled population, where my clients had a group home, had 8 clients at the group home that I worked at. And anyway, my kind of view of myself was more like, you know, I got the boot from the Navy, and all my mind's goofy, and I flunked out of college. I don't know if I flunked, but I went, you know, didn't go to college. 4 times I tried at that. But that city commission, getting elected to that, which is, I was 29. I'm the youngest ever to do it in Huron. That just changed the way I look at myself.
Awesome.
In an instant. And so that kind of made me feel, might say, worthy or compelled enough to get married. So about 9 months after I got elected, I got married. And then, you know, Tim, when the college was owned by those folks from Japan and got sold to Colorado Tech, yeah. You would have been living there at the time.
Yeah.
So they offered half price tuition to anybody that was related to a college graduate. And my wife at the time was a college graduate. So I came home one time late in the summer of 97 to find out I was being mandatedly asked to go back to college. So
you're undergraduate.
Yeah. My wife at the time said, you just got to go back and get it done. So I did that, graduated with an HRM degree. When I rounded up all my credits from all those college, I was a junior by 1 credit. And I had this bowling archery class from SDSU that I had to really work hard to get credit for. And then later on, as a junior or a senior, I took PE again. And wouldn't you know, the PE class was bowling. So on my transcripts, because the college closed down, they're actually somewhere on the campus in Aberdeen, where I live now at Northern, is where all the archives of that college here on university, all 100 some years, are stored somewhere on the campuses up at Northern here. Somewhere in there, I have a transcript with 2 bowling credits on there. And
you got your MBA there as well.
Yeah, then I just kept on rolling, and I did a really crafty thing, which I'm known to do from time to time. But as soon as I started that, I got this guy named Brad Mauger. He was like the interim head man in charge of the whole campus, right? And in the end, after a few months, he just went to being an instructor, like a professor. But they sent him ahead to kind of do a lot of footwork and stuff. So he's the one that I sat down with, and I was made me a junior by 1 credit. And then I said, hey, that legacy scholarship, is that good for, that'd be good for getting my master's degree too, if I ever just kept on growing? And he says, well, let's make it good. You know, he goes, I basically said, I don't have that much authority usually. So let me spend some of it while I got it. So we type up this letter. He puts it in my file. He takes a copy. I take a copy home. And then when I do graduate, I do decide to go ahead and try to get my MBA, which I did. And the guy that had that position that he was temporarily filling could not believe. He said, well, that legacy, that's not made for master's studies, you know. And I go, well, yeah, I think I know what you mean, but it's made for me, I said.
It's made and, for me. I love that.
Yeah, and so I started that, and about 3 or 4 months later, they made the legacy scholarship for all master's students. They realized, half tuition of 20 or 30 students is better than full tuition of, you know, 6 or something, because it was pretty expensive. It's expensive being half price. So anyway, that helped out a lot on getting my master's degree, and the check we wrote out later, 2 or 3 or 4 years later, to pay off all the student loans was way lower because of that low move, you know. And so that happened. I served my 5-year term on the city commission. My oldest daughter was 4 and a half when I got married, and then next daughter Joanna was born in 96 in April, and then Tosh in August of 2000. So we have those 3 kids. Tosh, I guess, will be 21 coming up this summer. And then lived there until 2001, where we moved to Rochester area over Eota, Minnesota. I was the general manager for Culver's for a while, and then HR manager
for people who don't know that. Would you describe what a Culver's is?
I might be a little bit biased, but it's a really tasty place to eat that's kind of upper medium priced, and you order and go sit down and they bring it to you. So it's like a hybrid of, you know, it's a hybrid of McDonald's and Perkins. Although I think when I started working there, that was 20 years ago, it leaned a little closer to McDonald's. And now I think what I call, they've kind of Perkinized it. The dining rooms are a lot more intimate in smaller, intimate seating areas with walls and things like that. And they work hard to keep their prices the best they can, but it's not the very cheapest place to eat, but it's cool.
And they're known for their custard, not ice cream, but custard.
That's what that means is it has to have 10% or more of butter fat to be called frozen custard. So the vanilla actually has more than the chocolate, but they both have over 10%, so they're able to call it frozen custard. It's pretty tasty and
it is popular.
And, you know, Culver's is pretty, it's in Florida now and stuff. When I live down there,
are there Culver's in Indiana, Jimmy?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's really creeping quite a bit. I don't know the number they're up to, but they're really rolling. So
good stuff.
So I worked there, and then I had a couple other jobs, HR jobs, I kind of segued over to HR jobs. And then in 2013, we moved over to South Dakota, to Aberdeen. And a couple other, the oldest 2 kids stayed. And then significant event, 2018, marriage is the year I got divorced. So that's a pretty significant event for someone like me. And I've been kind of a nomad since then, just doing different things, traveling around a little bit. And right now I split my time between Rochester and Aberdeen here, and just bought a house this spring there. And so I just do what it is, whatever it is I do. I'm still I was pretty big surprise. So I'm still trying to get my sea legs back to singlehood again. But I was 30 when I got married, so I had a lot of good single years. It's just trying to get reacquainted with the concept, I guess. And, you know, like everything, there's good parts of it as well. So,
well, how would you summarize? I mean, the whole concept of archiving.
Yeah.
How would you summarize that? What would you think? Do you think that other people should do this? And
yeah,
and then also talk about, just talk more about that for as a general thing for other people that might be, their interest might be piqued with that idea of doing it.
Well, that's the 2 things. One, I said earlier, one of the reasons I got a channel, what I think you guys call, everybody calls YouTube channel, is to keep me on the project. Cause I have, I like to say I have 30 more years. You know, like for some reason I got this feeling that I'm going to be here until my till I'm in the 80s, right? I don't know why that is, but I like to say that doesn't sound greedy or fatalistic, either one, right? Like it's like to say I'm going to live to the 80s. Like that's not like saying, hey, you don't deserve that much time. Lots of people die earlier. And it doesn't sound like I'm saying like, I'm going to keel over tomorrow. So I don't feel a compulsion to, you know, get my whole life out there in the next 6 months, right? Like I could take 15 or 20 years and just, you know, as stories come and the time comes when Steve-O's available and stuff, and have a really cool product and a literal archive of my life, of virtually any story that anything that happened to me that I really want to have in hard copy, so to speak, footage of it. I can do that, and I can go at a snail's pace and still accomplish that, right? Like the tortoise kind of thing. But one thing we ran into really quickly is this idea. When I talked to Steve-O about it, he goes, man, that's a great idea. Like he almost has adopted the idea more than me, in the sense that he thinks we really should push the concept that other people should consider doing this, right? Sitting down with someone or sitting down with themselves. But the technology is there that, you know, the last funeral I was at, the gentleman was 86 and just one of the coolest guys you'd ever want to meet, you know, just the salt of the earth, gem of a guy. But, you know, I don't think there's anything like one episode I could go and listen to that has him telling about what it was like when he was 3 or 7, 10, 25, you know, whatever went on in his life. And the thing is that I feel like I'm universally adequate, or like the things in my life are just universally common to everybody. And yet they're absolutely unique into myself all at the same time. And so that's what I would say to anybody. The reason I would try to convince someone to archive their life is because that's the only one there is of it. Who else is going to tell your stories?
Incredible. That's wisdom right there, buddy. Yeah.
You know, who else are you going to get? And you were saying, you said to me too, Tim, well, you know, you don't have a generational offspring. It's true. You got a nephew, you know, I think.
Talking to me, because I was telling you.
Yeah.
Doing it for your grandkids, great, 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 great kids.
Yeah, I mean, as I look at this picture.
I don't have any kids, and most likely won't. I mean, never say never, but at my age.
Yeah. And I said, but you have, but you have stories, right? Like even on here, you've said about why you, when you smell the rain, what it means to you, right? And I'm saying, I don't have rain. Doesn't mean that to me, but I bet it means that to other people, what it means to you, right? And it means something to me. See if I can say this correctly. It means something to me to know what rain means to you.
Wow. That's wisdom right there, buddy.
Because I know, you know, I enjoy knowing people, you know, and maybe I'm in the low percent of that, but that's how I'm wired. So I think we have the technology. So it just started to kind of permeate and dawn on me that, I'll go first is what I was feeling. And I just feel good. I don't have any, like I say, it's not a timetable and people don't really have, it's not even something where I want to try to get the people that I think would say in a year, why didn't you tell me about that? I'm going to try to get a hold of those people one way or another. I don't know if I got to call them on the phone or whatever, but it doesn't have to even be a mass thing because kind of have to know me and be interested enough in my life for it to make that much of a difference. So what I'm saying is even though it's out there, normally people create a content with express notion of entertaining someone or wanting people to come in and have something for them. And what I'm saying is I'm sure that will happen to one degree or the other, but mostly I want to just get it from inside to outside. And then whoever's interested or, you know, whoever, you know, 30 years from now, if I'm not here, the exact number of people that ever watch it will be the exact perfect amount that we're supposed to.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my, you know, what you call, sometimes I can't think of the right words, but when you're, you know, after action analysis or when summary, that's the word I'm trying to cut. That's the summary. I hope maybe I can get to some people who'll get to some people and it'll get to somebody's minds to say, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take some time while I'm here. And it, technology is available to tell. I mean, even my dad, one generation up, my dad would have some cool stories. And I bet you there'd be a lot of them that I never did get around to hearing either, you know. And one thing that's kind of a collateral outcome is that as I think back on times in my life, it's given me a few more clues as to why I am the way I am today. And when I come across something that's a little bit of a clue, then I have to decide, okay, is that an attribute or a faction, a part of my life that I like and I want to keep? Or is that an attribute or a tendency that I would like to cast aside or trim down or adjust, right? And thinking this hard about times past in my life is going to be helpful, I think, to me going forward. And that's a little collateral outcome that I never had thought of or planned, but I can feel it kind of formulating as a good, another good positive for the whole project.
You know, talking about funerals, you know, because I had to plan my father's funeral. Well, my sisters helped me, of course, but
yeah, I think I made it to the night before there.
Yeah, you did. Yes, you did. Thank you for that.
Oh, sure.
And I had to take care of the estate sale, and it took me 3 minutes because my dad had a farm. He had so much stuff.
Yeah.
Not necessarily valuable, but stuff. And
yeah.
I went through, I could have probably just as well, instead of taking 3.5 months to prepare it, taken a half a month and taken most of that to the dump because it wasn't worth anything. Nobody wanted to buy it. Like my favorite story is the Kirby vacuum cleaner that used to be the big thing. Everybody wanted a Kirby vacuum cleaner.
Oh, boy, did it.
And I spent $4.50 for a belt on that thing and because the belt was bad and it brought less than what I spent on the belt at the sale. It sold for $3.25.
Wow.
So anyway,
melt those down and make a lot of tools out of them Kirby's. Those are big things.
They are heavy. You know, old school way. Now they don't even have bags. They have what's it called?
That round ball guy? The ball
has, yeah,
that,
what's it called?
Starts with a D, doesn't it?
Yeah, starts with a D. Jimmy, help us. Anyway.
Yeah. He was like his 50th prototype too by the time he got done. Or he really worked on that thing, yeah. It can go around the corner. Dyson? Is it Dyson?
Dyson, that's it. Yeah, Dyson.
He can go right around the corner with that thing.
Yeah. Anyhow, so it's a story I tell as humor, but it also speaks to some tragedy of somebody's life. My one uncle, the one who, Ellen, who never had a hair out of place. You knew him.
Yeah, that's right. It looked like one of them potato head pieces or those little
flies. Yeah, absolutely perfect.
Pull the hair off.
He's still alive. He's still, you know, doing quite well, kicking. Anyway, he told me, and he kind of related humorously. We're Hutterite, ex-Hutterite, so our names are rather distinctive. You know, Glanzer, yeah. Hofer. His was Hofer, and is Hofer, I should say, not was is. And yeah. And so they're rather distinctive names. And so in Sioux Falls, when there would be a funeral with a Hutterite name, he's retired, anything better to do, he would go to the funeral. And even though he didn't know the person, but he felt a connection because of the name.
Yeah.
I think you told
this story on here, Tim.
I may have. Yeah. I'll repeat it again.
It's and, worth it, yeah.
The funny thing about it, I think it's funny. He went on, and there was nobody there except for him. He was the only one there. And the pastor says, oh, so you knew our brother Hofer? Oh, no, I'm just here because it's a Hutterite name. And that's funny. That's a funny story. But think about the poor guy that had absolutely nobody at his funeral.
Yeah.
You know, that guy had a life. Whoever that guy was.
Yeah.
He probably had a lot of stories, but nobody's remembering him if nobody even came to his funeral. You know, I'm just extrapolating a little bit, but you know.
No, that's you're on the rut of the whole thing is that we spend our lives to one degree or another interacting with each other. And so, I mean, I can't even some of the things that, you know, I have for upcoming episodes and stuff as I relive, like I can't believe, I mean, I can believe it cause I was there, but I mean, they're unique, you know, and they're not normal things that have happened. And so almost all of them I did with other people. Right. So I think bringing the stories to life will have a decent kind of cool effect of them getting to relive it. They might, maybe things will, I'll tell stories and I'll be able to say, and I have one already recorded about my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Tollefson. And I tried my best once I was back in Huron in those years and the city commission years, I ran into a lot of old teachers on different boards and stuff. And first I apologized for my behavior and then I would tell them, you know, what they meant to me. But some of these stories that I have, I think will be a benefit to relatives of people, of someone that did something. Like one I'm thinking of is like three or four men. I don't even want to call them mentors, but people that about your age group, Tim, like, you know, Sherman Roth.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So him and two or three other guys that were friends, older friends, he's about a 78 graduate, if I remember right, but 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years older than me that hung around with my brothers. There was we had this big house, Jimmy, big house, and people were always coming and going. And for a while, this ladder was up against the house and friends would just crawl in there and my brothers would crawl out at night.
How do you even go through the front door?
Yeah, we remodeled our house for like 2.5 straight years and that ladder just sat there, but it was just an exit for my brothers and friends coming in and out. And I was the youngest of that whole pack for a while, 7 and then 6, 5. But occasionally there was be a friend of theirs that spent time with me. Like every time they would come over, they would search me out, right? And sit with me. And so I've got that Sherman and two or three other guys. One died a year ago in April of COVID, and he was a pastor down in Missouri Valley in Iowa. But I'm sure I'm sure those people in that case, you know, the survivors, but they probably don't have any clue the impact they made on me or their family or friends or whatever. But it made a big difference in my life. Those kind of Virgil Carlson, Tim. And what I'm saying is there was plenty of people coming and going that didn't do that. And there was no law saying that they had to, right? Like they weren't coming to my house to see me, but those three or four people, every time they came to my house, they made sure to, you know, quote, see me. And I never forgot it. You know, I tried to do that as well, you know, as someone that's, as I was those ages, maybe going to church in Sioux Falls, Tim, I would spend time making sure to spend time with kids that were my age when I was the age of those guys, when I was 22, 23, 25. So,
well,
that's the project.
I feel that we have gone on probably, I feel you're right, keeping yours under 20 minutes. And we've just rambled on for almost an hour.
I know.
And, I hope people find it interesting. Jimmy, you haven't said much. Please add some words of wisdom.
Nah, I've enjoyed it, man. Fed's life story, pretty much, man. I think it's great what you're doing about cataloging your, you know.
Yeah, that's a good word. Yeah.
Experiences.
I love it. I think it's inspiring. It's made me think of it. I think that everyone should consider it. No one ever watches it. Just the experience of going through and reliving it, I think, does all of us is a benefit. And then, of course, somebody's going to watch it. There are people that are going to find it interesting. So, let's make YouTube build twice as many more server farms to house all this.
Well, we, you know, one of the things, Jimmy, Steve, the guy I'm working with, Steve Hayes from Happy Life Studios there, I don't know who decides the podcasting categories, but as we were working on this, we're like, I don't know if we can even, maybe the trick will be finding out who you would even lobby to, but it should be a category of its own. You know, they've got those spiritualities and what all, entertainment and this and that. And I'm thinking, like, wouldn't it be cool 10 years from now that it's just it's an archiving podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's we should end with that. That should be the hopefully that happens, Fedge, and will have started a movement. You will be the start of it. And kudos to you, man, for starting it off. And I hope it does turn on to something like that.
Well, I'm mostly just, I don't know if I say proud, but I like it when I think about something and then I actually get around to doing it, you know?
Well, right is the right word. So,
yeah. Hey, I appreciate you guys. I
appreciate you.
Thanks for having me on, Jimmy. I got to meet you sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
are you guys getting close to going to somewhere, Scandinavia?
In a month, we're going to Ukraine.
Ukraine. Okay. All right.
All right.
Bye.
See you next time. Thank you.